Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is the Anfield wrap after Liverpool get beat 1-1 by Crystal Palace at Anfield. I'm sick of getting beat. Two games so far this season at Amelia where we've got beat. We're going to have to just deal with it.
Yeah, I'm not particularly enjoying this season. It's rubbish. Liverpool aren't very good.
Would you like to start again?
Yeah. I feel like something's gone wrong. I feel like it's very clunky for a start.
Yeah.
The games are in weird places at strange times. the Charity Shield was ages ago. We were quite good then.
We're different people.
Why aren't there any games?
Everyone said, oh, it's a congested season with the World Cup. You're going to have to watch this, you're going to have to watch that. We barely played. Yeah. We're not playing again for ages.
I mean, we don't know what to do with it. It's like, how long until the next game? 3 weeks. Yeah. Well, and even Klopp is like, oh, I love having training time. It looks like Eva's like, no. Can we have a game on Wednesday, please?
Yeah, not least because he's training them and the legs are falling off.
Oh, there's a fella with a hammer going around giving everybody a knock. Possibly Timmy Mallet. and just out of the blue, it's like, oh, it's, so you know, there'll be a whole team sheet that appears and you think, I've seen that team, and then 10 minutes later you say, what, that Phillips in that team?
It was
Phillips gets inserted 10 minutes after the first time I looked at the team sheet, Nat Phillips appeared in it.
Yeah.
it was quite something. Liverpool 1 Crystal Palace 1. We'll get into all of that. We'll start off with the main thing, Mo, which isn't just the idea of can we start the season again, please, but is instead the fact that ultimately the sending off is just bloody daft.
Yes.
He gets himself wound up. He does what he does. It is a red card. That, I want to be really clear about this. The fact that it is a red card doesn't mean the referee is any less of a prick. No. So let's be absolutely crystal clear. The referee can send him off and still be a prick from Greater Manchester, which so many of them seem to be these days. But the sending off is just bloody daft.
It is weird. The fact that it was him when this happened, because it's almost like
best day of his life.
Yeah,
best exactly. Day he got married.
Literally, he was just like, oh, this is so perfect. I get to do this and have a complete righteous indignation. From our perspective, yes, it's daft. It's funny actually, because initially I didn't see the incident. I just saw Anderson on the ground and I saw him giving the red card. And it was already quite a feral atmosphere in the cop by that point. We were already pissed off with life. And when that happened, we were just like, oh my God, it can't be. It's an injustice. And I was ready to kind of climb down the stand and give Anderson exactly what I thought of him. And then someone behind me showed me the replay and I was so... I couldn't even bring myself to boo him after that, Anderson. I was just like, yeah, I mean, fair enough. And it's one of those things where everyone's going to say, oh, he's going to learn from this. And the other thing everyone's going to say is that every team from now on is going to try it on with him. Both those things can be true and hopefully will be true.
Yeah.
I do think that every single team now is going to try up with him. But in some ways, it's good that this happened so early, because now he's going to be like, you know, you absolutely cannot react to it.
It is bloody daft, Paul. But what is also daft is the sending off changes the game as a positive for Liverpool. That really shouldn't be how football works. You're not meant to suddenly come on leaps and bounds when you go down to them, especially these days, where team structures are so spot on, where team defensive structures are so spot on, where everyone's got a plan for everything at all times. We've seen Liverpool go to Manchester City in the start of the 17-18 season, go down to 10, and he can barely get a kick of the ball after that point. Now that is Guardiola's Manchester City, and Vieira's Crystal Palace are in a slightly different place. But it was like they couldn't get a kick of the ball for 20 minutes afterwards. Liverpool are brilliant for the first 20 minutes after they go down to 10 men.
Yeah, there's so much wrong and fascinating and intriguing about the red card. It's mad. Like, I'm watching the games at home now, which is lovely because it's a whole different perspective. So I get to watch Monday Night Football. And even when the red was brandished, you wouldn't have seen this because it was the way it was cut, like the edit, when it was brandished. And I think everyone forgets this as well. I only remember this watching it back. He got sent off just after Diaz tried a ridiculous overhead kick from about 15 yards out. The trajectory of the ball was meant, it was impossible. If he could have scored an overhead kick from there, it would have been like magic. And the way Sky edited it was they showed the overhead kick, then they cut away, then they cut to the ref. And I'm furious at Diaz at this point. And the ref shows a red card. And I'm like, that's a bit harsh. it's a ridiculous decision, but a red. And then after the game, there was a bit with Carragher showing the footage again. And I loved how indignant Carragher was about it. But not because, like, we're all saying it was stupid. It was because the ref was looking straight at him. Like, they had this angle, I don't know whether you've seen it since, from, like, zoomed out, where, because it shows you Joe Nunes remonstrating with the ref, so you're thinking, well, where is he? And the ref's literally looking straight at him from 10 yards away. And that, when Carragher was like, I was like, this is just, how has this got worse? Like, to throw your head in on someone like that is stupid. To do it when this ref from Greater Manchester is looking straight at you, it was like, Carragher was like, I'm all right with it if he thinks the ref's looking the other way. Do you know what I mean? If he thinks he can get away with it, and again, just throw
that's
it.
That's another
in.
Thing he's got to learn. It's all the process.
You can sort of see that. But, and then onto what you were saying, like, it's funny watching the Diaz stuff, and we'll get onto that. Like, I was subbing Diaz before that point. I thought his first half was all over the place. He was giving the ball away. And then him and everybody else, once he got sent, it raises so many questions of, like, how can we get so much better when that happens? It reminded me of, I don't even know who it was, you might remember. Do you remember there was a mad manager once? He might have even been in Italy. And he was so unhappy with his team's performance, he just started taking lads off. Like, it was like, you're going to run harder here. I'm just going to keep taking a lad off until you learn to run around. It reminded me of that. And on the one hand, brilliant, and, you know, it's great that we can do that.
And it shows genuine collective courage and character and bravery, and they were dead brave with the ball, and they took risks and all of that.
All of that stuff. And then on the other side of it, we talk about this just for hours, it shows you as well just how much football's changed on your point of 10 against 11. Because when you play like Crystal Palace play, having an extra man doesn't give you an advantage in the way it used to give you an advantage. Because the advantage of having an extra man is having an extra man to pass the ball to and to move the other team around. When you're not interested in having the ball, having an extra man just gives you an extra lad to defend with. So it helps you stopping the other team getting to your goal. But it actually doesn't change the dynamic of the game that much, which is a weird thing to see. It's the first time I've ever really been conscious of that.
When Chelsea got a man sent off at Anfield last year, that occurred to me last night, because they played well after they went down to 10. It focused their mind, and I guess they weren't trying to win the game like we were trying to win the game, but it did sort of make me think about that one.
Yeah, well, I was thinking that we played better with 10 men than we've played against 10 men in a long time for a lot of similar reasons. And again, I was thinking a lot about structures of games. And like you were saying, Neil, every team has a plan. Everyone knows the plan. Everyone knows what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to be in this or that. And there doesn't seem to be enough randomness anymore. Like, I've even noticed it with some of our guys. Some of the guys, like Diaz and Harvey Elliott, when they first came in the team, they were taking the ball, they were running with it, they were attacking the first man in front of them, they were trying to beat a man, trying to get forward. And you think, okay, when you haven't learned the system, that's what you do, you go on instinct. And then you learn the system, and they stop doing it. There were so many times last night I was just like, can someone just run up someone, please? Can someone really please just draw a defender and make some extra space? And I feel like we've lost, players lose that side of them once they become assimilated into the system. I think we need to find a way for the system to still allow that.
Well, what one of the things that I think why that doesn't happen last night is I think when it's 11v11, and I think we play with intensity, it's there from the outset. They create a fair few opportunities, Mo. They're not great chances, and this is a little conversation around composure. But I think that one of the reasons why no one's really running at anyone is because the gaps between the attackers were absolutely enormous. Between, at times, between Darwin, Diaz, Salah, And then even Elliot, to throw Elliot in, it felt like there was constantly 15, 20 yards between them. Elliot would get a bit closer to Salah, maybe occasionally get a bit closer to Darwin. But they just all felt really, really isolated from each other. And then that's something that changes when it does go down to 10 men, because suddenly Salah and Diaz are playing much closer together and being able to be much more disruptive, but also back each other up and create 50-50s. And that wasn't there at the start of the game, even though we were creating the odd chance.
That's so true, actually, because there were a couple of times when Fabinho or even that Phillips had the ball in the centre circle and he was kind of advancing with it, and it looked, and from where we were sitting in the cup, you should get the whole picture. And like you say, there's one over there, and there's at least two white shirts between the man with the ball and all of them. And it's very much just like, you need Bobby in this situation. That's kind of what he does, is he knits everyone together. And something else that kind of is a product of that, I remember the days when I used to see a team coming to Anfield with three at the back and I'd be like, sweet, we're going to win this game, because we can tear three at the back apart, because what Bobby does is that he creates havoc. He's the guy in the middle who's normally there to sit at the back and kind of cover. He feels like he has to come forward because the other two are kind of matching the other two. We've got overloads on either side. And the way that our system works just seems to tear it apart perfectly. There was none of that last night. There was not really many overlapping runs from the fullbacks either.
I mean, they loved going and playing centre forwards. They were very committed to going and playing centre forwards, I felt.
But outside of that, and the kind of ball from out to in over towards the back post, it didn't really seem to be much.
I thought the shape was insane, to be honest. I still can't get my head around it. As you were saying, the fullback's playing up front. Salah was on the wing. You know, he's a winger again. He looks like Chelsea Salah. What's going on? I think that the, you know, average positions, I haven't looked at the average positions, but Salah's definitely on the wing.
Very much on the wing on the average positions, first half especially.
Diaz was on the halfway line on the other side.
On the wing.
But extremely deep on the wing as well. At least Salah was near the goal. This is before Darwin gets sent off. And Darwin seemed to just be bobbing around trying to win headers, you know, with miles of space in between, as you say. And then eventually everybody gets dragged in, and it's Robertson on his right foot generally popping up as the last man. What, you know, is that the plan? It's mad.
Guardiola seems to have like doubled down on his fullbacks as midfielders thing. Like, even David Moyes after their game was like, it was mad that, like, they're literally midfielders now. I know they've done a bit of that in the past, and it's like we've looked at it and gone, we can trump that. Watch this. You won't have seen this coming. Andy Robertson playing as an inside, like, left.
But is it? I mean, I don't mind. I don't mind Trent where he ended up last night after the sending off. I think he annoyed me all last season, drifting in and being in the weird narrow channel. But I don't mind what we did with him last night. And I thought he was actually really good.
He was really good when we went down to 10.
But it was really good when we went down to 10. And I think, just to go back to what we were saying about going down to 10, I don't think it's anything necessarily to do with the one-man disadvantage or us suddenly getting, you know, bitten on the bum and deciding to wake up. I do think it was because the shape was better without Darwin there without the front three doing, as I said, their average positions of insanity. Having Robertson being the player who's on the end of all of these things, he is our least most likely scorer, probably. Yeah. So especially on his weak foot, it just seemed like a mad plan. And amongst that, and it was that really. I've watched Liverpool for years and years, deciding to play well just as it's probably too late. And that was, you know, that was what we did last night. And generally, it's because you've gone two goals down or something, or, you know, gone a goal down, and you think, well, we might end up with a draw here. And that was, you know, it was like that last night, except it was a sending off. And it's that, to be honest, is, I'm still processing this, Neil, and I haven't eaten much today. I haven't watched any of it back. This is why I'm going more general with it, because I feel like it's almost like that is what Liverpool are like. Like, we are good just as it's probably about too late, and that's not good enough.
Well, this is why, Mo, within it all, why there was oddness. Now, to be clear, I think Milner should score first minute. I think it's a good opportunity. I think it's actually a better opportunity than its expected goals rating, which I did about 0.15. I thought it was a little bit better than that, taking into account where everybody was at that moment and the fact that all he needs to do, I would say, is show a bit of composure. And that was, you know, we've criticise the positions they've ended up in, but I felt, even allowing for that, when they were, for the first half an hour, when it was 0-0, when they were getting around the Crystal Palace box, the thing I wanted to see was just a little bit more composure. Yes. I think if they'd have shown a little bit more composure, they would have found the way to the back of the net. I think that the for the first half an hour, the intensity was there, but I thought that the intensity being there, the fact that they do start fast, well, they start fast. The fact that they were, it was almost, you know, and this is why we're all bell ends and football's hard, is because if anything, I'd say they're almost starting too fast. They were really, really anxious. Really, I thought they lacked composure. But the one thing they did was they got around the Crystal Palace penalty area and they were able to make things happen, just not in a calm way.
No, you're right. There was that kind of anxiety, that kind of anxious energy towards it. And the times where we start fast is because we know that getting a goal and maybe then getting two goals changes the opponent's game plan. That's the easiest and quickest way to get the opponents to change what they're doing is for us to score goals. And you get the feeling that there was a little bit of like, okay, once we've got that goal, we can settle down. Because obviously they're aware of the fact that we didn't win the first game. And so everyone's coming into thinking, okay, we just need to win this game. It doesn't matter anything else. So get the first goal on the goal, and then we'll go. And it was a bit more anxious. And there was times when we were playing really well, and we'd play half an hour where we're building, we're creating chances, not taking them. And it was 0-0 at halftime, and I'd be in the concourse just thinking, we're sound, we're going to win this game 2-0. And we would. And that confidence and calm assurance that I had that these guys are going to get there, it's normally because the players have got that as well. And I don't think the players had that last night. And we certainly didn't.
There was maybe something about the bench options. That was something we were talking about. There was no strikers on the bench. I think that sort of game is not massively unusual the first half hour. We see that sort of all the time. But then Mane scores or Jota scores. And those two players, you know, I think that these sorts of games, you know, maybe I'm being a bit unfair on the players we have there. Obviously, Salah scores every game as well, but I feel like those sorts of games, a little bit of a scrappy, just somebody banging it in is what you need.
On the idea of the lack of composure, this is where I think it's interesting post-match when he is talking about how disrupted they felt all week, because that was the fact that they weren't calm, and the fact that I don't think that calm was ever there. I don't think the calm's even there when it's 10-11 and they're playing better. I don't think they calmed down all the way through the match. No. They seemed agitated, and what he's saying afterwards suggests that they've not had an air of calm about them. Now, what I would say is, and what he would say, to be absolutely honest and fair, is, well, it's his job to ensure that's present, yeah. You know, and he would say that, and he would acknowledge that. But that's where I think there is a little thing here where, clearly at the minute, something, you know, he uses the metaphor of the idea of the you know, we feel like there was a witch at the training ground and all that sort of thing. That's just him talking in the aftermath of the game.
Is that what Klopp said?
Yeah, whatever there is.
I said Timmy Mallett.
Timmy Mallett, it's very similar. We feel like there's a Timmy Mallett at the training ground. But whatever it is, I think this is something that they are going to have to have a little bit of a think about and have a little bit of a plan for, because I think they've just got to find their way to breathe in and out a little bit during the season. We can be head cases. We've got the luxury of that. They haven't. They've got to be able to respond in the moment.
I think their head casery is very, very much like ours, actually, and that is a problem, as you say. I think we spent all week, I know me and you had to text about it, and I think you probably said it on shows as well, saying, I wish we had a midweek game. There was too long in between the games for everything to get wound up. I think Man City's two wins are in the players' heads. They're certainly in mine. The fact that we're going to Old Trafford next is in my head, possibly was in the players as well, because they think that, as Mo was saying,
it's in a selection. The reason he doesn't risk Gomez because he's worried about Matip, because they're going to go to Old Trafford next. I think he doesn't risk Firmino. They talk about Henderson's only got half an hour, and it's like, I think it's in his mind. I don't want them to get injured. I think it's present.
Yeah, I think it's present, and you know, so that manifests itself after the scrappy goal, as I say, the one that Mane usually scores doesn't happen, then very quickly it turns into kind of, you know, the thing that I used to do my head in about Gerrard a lot, you know, trying to take the game by the scruff of the net, Roy the Rovers style, from about 30 minutes. I was actually thinking this walking in, I wondered whether it's one of the drawbacks of having so many captains in the team, because you've got so many players there that can see something's going wrong, and somehow there isn't one captain that does the calm thing. They've all decided to in some way grasp it and do make the change themselves when there's, you know, lots of time left. There's lots of space to do calm things, and you know, what the things that you'd like to do. One of them would be kind of in that situation is bringing Milner when he's already on, and you know, there is certainly some hard lines involved, but I can sense the fraught atmosphere. I do think it's the same as ours. It's the same as mine. That's how it seemed. And obviously, as you say, Neil, it's not good enough. And that's there needs to be. I don't know what needs to happen, really. Maybe they need to get beat, or maybe they need to feel like they've got a mountain to climb. It does feel like a very unusual start to the season, and I feel like something. I don't know. There needs to be a bit of a gear change somewhere for everyone's head to click in properly.
I think the psychology of the whole game, I think, is interesting, Paul. Not least because I actually think Palace, and the best thing that Vieira could have done in hindsight, and I'd love to be able to speak to him about it, would have been as soon as it goes to 10, to go 4-3-3 and to say we win this 2-0. And that could be the best thing that Vieira could have done in hindsight. But he's at Anfield, and I think this is really interesting. You know, last season, Palace won at City. It's worth remembering. And they've got a point against City at home. So they got 4 points off City last season. So they know how to win in those times and in these games. But what I think is really interesting is 0-1, something to hold on to. 1-1 is an all right result. When we go to 10, I think they, and it was dead interesting, their end was boisterous, it was having a great time. As soon as we go down to 10 men, they sort of celebrate it. And they spent the next, I thought, half an hour all looking at each other going, oh God. And I thought their players did a bit of that as well, because suddenly you go from, we should not be favourites to win this game, even at 0-1, with half an hour left, we shouldn't be favourites. And suddenly what they're thinking is, hang on, we should win this. And I thought you got to see that, and I thought you got to see Liverpool flip the other way. And I think all of that through the game, I think that there's Liverpool issues for the first hour, and then I think there is actually a Crystal Palace issue with, like, why aren't we on top? Why aren't we running this game? And they can't really cope.
Yeah, I think the psychology of this game, and the psychology of the two games we've played so far, in the wider sense, which I'll come on to, but the psychology of this game is fascinating. Even when we scored, after we'd gone down to 10 men, and I'm sort of making some notes watching it, because I knew I was going to do this today, and I thought to myself, actually, it's not a bad thing if we don't score dead quick here. Like, I'm quite happy if we score our second goal in the 85th minute, because we're on top. The psychology of this game has become weird. We've gone down to 10. You couldn't really hear on the telly, but that makes sense, what's happened with the crowd. They've started to worry now, because all of a sudden they're like, hang on, is this a good thing? Or, like, would this be a good result at 1-1? Because I'd forgotten that as well. They won at City last year. So you would, in sort of the wider history of football, even at 1-1, you've got 11 men at Anfield. It's your opportunity to go and win Anfield. And that just didn't happen. They didn't try and do that. And I think that's fascinating in itself. But I was thinking to myself, well, the way we've started dominating this game, as soon as we go 2-1 up, on the assumption that's going to happen because we've started battering them, that could swing completely again. Because our lads then start going, right, we need to hold, because we've only got 10. They're looking at each other going, we've only got 10 lads.
That's why he was holding on to the last sub. I think our manager was holding on to the last sub because he was thinking, if I need to do one more, after, which involves, after it goes 2-1, if I need to do one more, I need to make sure I've got one more I can do.
Yeah, I agree with that. And as well, I think there's a really interesting thing on the one more that ties into the last game. And this is a psychology in theory versus real life point. When we came off the back last season, and you get to look at the fixture, you get to look at the results, and you get to look at the win, lose and draw columns, and you get to see that City lost more games than us and they still won the league. We get to say, draws killed us. Can't afford draws. Draws, and they were saying this on Sky, a draw's like a loss. That's fine in theory, because you get idiots like me going, well, the thing about three draws is you better roll in the dice, because if you win one and lose two, you've got the same points. If you win two and lose one, you've got more points. That's Guardiola, that's Alex Ferguson, one of my old favourite topic. That's fine in theory, when you can look back and do the points totalling. What we're seeing in real life is, because I thought we'd come into the season and with 10, 15 minutes of any game left, if we were drawing, I thought what you'd see is us rolling the dice. We'd really use that last sub. Do you know what I mean? Like, Keita would have come on last night. We'd have taken off a centre-back, or we'd have taken off Fabinho and gone, put another attacking-minded player on, because a draw is useless to us. And I was just looking, if you just look at the numbers, and this is skewed a bit because we were 10 men last night for half an hour, but we had 10 minutes plus stoppage time against Fulham, and we had 30 minutes plus stoppage time last night. And in that time, we didn't look psychologically like we were going, we're rolling the dice to win these games. And that makes sense in real life.
Yeah.
Because it's all right for me to say, yeah, but roll the dice and you might lose, but you'll win.
I think we're Lord Knackered.
But I think that's not even the main problem.
Like, it's nervous energy, I think. I think that.
But I think on this point, it's that if you roll the dice, you could lose two games. And it's all well and good saying a draw is a defeat. It's not. A draw gets you a point, and a point could win you the league. City literally won the league by 1 point, and one of their draws won them the league. Mm. And I think that's the problem in real life is, if you're Klopp, you're going, oh, well, all right, mate. Like, Kopey on the internet.
Like, it's easier said than done.
You're the manager. You're going to lose two games on the bounce, are you? You're bottom of the league with Man United now.
Well, this is it. This is the other thing I was going to say. In that scenario where you lose two and win one, if you win the third one, then those 2 weeks where you've lost the first two are going to be rough. And you don't know how much that's going to take out of them. And obviously, the other thing to think about is goal difference. Because you can lose two badly and win one. All right. I think you're still actually at a deficit. I think that all of that psychology stuff is interesting because, like you say, we didn't go all out for it, which suggests that all of the feelings amongst the fan base that the title's already over because we've already lost 4 points on City and all that kind of stuff is clearly not the same in the dressing room. Because if that was the case, then they would be selling out. They would be thinking, we cannot afford to drop these 2 points here because that's it all over. The thing that I think most interesting about the way that the conservativeness or the attackingness of Klopp himself rather than the actual team is the injury situation. Mm. I think if we think back to that time that we've all tried to forget two seasons ago, there was a lot of those kind of weird selections, like kind of like ultra pragmatism, where Klopp was like, because I haven't got as much of my squad, I can't be as adventurous as I have to be. I have to be more pragmatic. We saw it with Tsimikas. It was like, well, because everyone else is injured, I have to keep Robertson in, so Tsimikas isn't going to play, and all those kind of decisions. And I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but the fact that we've had so many so soon, I feel like that's bringing that in. Because I looked at Gomez in that second half, and I was livid that he wasn't playing the first half. I was almost like, if he hadn't played at all, I'd have been happier. Yeah. But I think me and Ben
said, he better not bring Gomez.
Even as Gomez plays great ball after great ball, covers the ball again, wins it back again, wins another challenge.
Go on then, be brilliant again.
And it's really easy to look at that in that team as the weak link and the odd man out and et cetera, et cetera. And yes, you can look at his contribution for the Palace's goal, say that he was caught square and it wasn't the only time he's caught square. I look at that, I watch the goal back and think that Gomez might have been caught square, but he would have caught up to Zaha before the ball had gone. He would have been able to deal with that issue. And the fact that he wasn't there, And that Phyllis was.
It's starting to do my head in this thing, though, you know. Like, even on Sky, they were doing this whole thing of Liverpool centre backs don't cover for each other. Liverpool centre backs don't cover each other. Like, that's just like, it's like hands up. Like, if you freeze frame that goal, right? Nat Phillips is Nat Phillips. I think we've all accepted this.
Yeah.
And the problem with Nat Phillips in that moment, and fair, you know, better players than him have made this mistake. He doesn't stick or twist. He doesn't actually close the ball because he doubts himself for a split second and then you're gone. But if you freeze frame it as Zaha starts his run, Van Dijk is 3 yards ahead of him. And if he just matches the run and he can still hold the line, but he can be running towards his own goal at full Van Dijk afterburner pace, not Van Dijk, I can just jog alongside him pace, which we see a lot, but his afterburner pace. You can't tell me, you can't convince me, no one can convince me that he doesn't catch Zaha. Mm. Bearing in mind that even if it's in a straight foot race, I don't know how fast Zaha is anymore. He's getting on. But even in a straight foot race, if he's faster than Van Dijk, he literally has to slow down to get the ball. Yes. Like, it's like, I was thinking about this last night, it's like Formula One racing. Like, if everything was just about how fast every car is, it would be pointless because the fastest car would always win. But the point is, every time you get to a corner, you have to slow down and that gives the person behind you an opportunity to do something. So as he slows down for the ball, Van Dijk with his afterburners on could catch him. And we seem to have created this mad thing that, like, oh no, we just don't do that. We just see if our goalie can save it. And that's worked so well for so long. Great. I'm not sure it's the greatest idea in the world.
I think Van Dijk thinks he's offside, by the way. And this is the late flag thing. I think Van Dijk thinks it's off.
I think that, and we've talked about this in the past about the weird psychology of this flag thing. I think it's even in the goalie's head all the time, because the goalie is constantly, not constantly, but more than often than you'd think in a game, facing one-on-ones. Mm-hmm. And 99% of the time, they're offside. That must be a weird psychology for both the last defender and the goalie, that in the back of your mind, you're thinking, he's probably off. He's probably off. Do I have to save this? Do I have to get a last-ditch tackle in?
Yeah, I think there's a little thing on that, and I think there's something they're going to have to think about. You're looking knackered points. So I watched a lot of football over the weekend.
Yeah.
And I watched Villa versus Everton. I watched Brighton versus Newcastle the last 20 minutes. Brighton looked brilliant, by the way. I'm glad we're playing them for another couple of weeks. They look absolutely brilliant, Brighton. I watched Fulham, the back end of Fulham Wolves, because of the way the times of the games finished. I watched Brentford versus United, and I watched Chelsea versus Spurs. That's a lot of football. Mm. Everyone looked knackered last 10. Mm. Everyone looked like Villa. I mean, the poor lad's got himself, the new sign ends up getting himself an injury.
Yeah.
Villa were on their knees last 10. Four or five Everton players were on the knees, but the new signing had just come off the bench, so he had a burst of energy that no one could cope with. Brighton were on the knees, even though they played ever so well. Newcastle looked done in. United Brentford's a weird game, but I think by the time half time comes, United look goosed, but they look goosed because they look as though they're a wreck. And Chelsea versus Spurs, I thought, you know, two teams went absolutely hell for leather, especially Chelsea at each other. And last 10, Chelsea were just dead wobbly. I think that this is in part a start of the season thing, but, and this is where I'm going to be critical of Liverpool, and critical of Liverpool against Fulham, and critical of Liverpool in this one against Palace. This is why you want to be going in 2-0 up. This is why you want to actually leave it all on the table first half, because if you're 2-0 up, Palace are also knackered. Palace will get to the end, and also what's then not happening is your centre-forward's not getting himself sent off because he's a lot calmer. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is my frustration. My frustration is Liverpool were the better side for the first half an hour, but you've got to make sure you're getting it right, because you've got to convert it into goals, because it's going to be harder and harder as this game, as these games wear on, I think, for the first couple of weeks, first month or two, to have control of the end of these matches. And that's my frustration, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, it's really difficult to say, but I mean, my point about us looking knackered was sort of as a response to the rolling the dice, and, you know, can we do something more in that in the last 10 minutes. It's, you know, there's a phase of play where we sort of say, oh, there's still bags of time left, and that's last until about, you know, 86 minutes, and then the bags of time era is finished, and then
the cycle at 78 bags of time. 86 are you messing it to the bathroom right now, and that doesn't seem fair at all. Right.
No, I know, but it was the same against Fulham last week. The board goes up, and I think it was 5 minutes both matches last night and last week. But we didn't look particularly like we were going to be creating anything. We looked tired, and I think it probably is a little bit harsh because the roll the dice options aren't there, so there is an injury thing. But my concern is that I think this has been going on a while. I'm not necessarily the tiredness, but the lack of creativity. We've almost turned into one of those teams where it's like, if you can get through plan A, Liverpool's plan A, they blow themselves out and they run themselves out of ideas. I think that we are starting to look a little bit like one of those teams. And actually, I feel like, I don't know how long this has gone on, because sort of sometimes we just score. And this is my worry about missing Jota and not having Mane, as they are people that will skew games by just scoring out of nothing. And I think that has potentially been skewing how good we are for a while. That's my worry.
But I think that's built into how we play and how we structure.
Maybe lots of teams are like that.
Loads and loads of teams are like that. But I think it's structured into how we play. But I think the problem at the minute is that, first, this is part of them all being too far apart early in games. Point, Mo. This is part of the, you know, part of the, when it does bounce to you around the penalty area, which it did, the Milner chance, I'll say it again, it's a really, no, it's early in the game, but it's a really, really good chance. The keeper's all but put himself out of commission. They've got Matt lads back, but they're at absolute panic stations. And, you know, it is a classic, just get it on target, because it could have ricocheted again, anything could have happened. There's loads of this, I think, throughout the game, and that's why.
There isn't, well, I mean, when you say there's loads of it, we don't make many chances after
but there's
that.
The, for instance, the on 10 minutes, they have the one that Elliot has where he clears across. That was on its way in, but also it then doesn't drop to a Liverpool player. There's the piece at the end of the second half, or sort of the end of the first half, where the new Darwin one hits the post, the inside of the post. Yeah. It doesn't drop to Salah. Then Salah weirdly fouls the lads, but then Van Dijk fucks it up anyway, so it's all right in the end. We all relax. My point is there's these little bits in there where, but again, this is back to firstly, it dropping to the right player, and the right player in this instance might be Diogo Jota. There's all these little bits, I think, where they've just got to sharpen that a little bit, and I think a lot of it be sharpened by them being closer.
I think so. I think also there is a little bit of nervousness around the fact that they are aware of this whole score early thing, just like we are. And another thing to bring into this whole getting goals early conversation is we talk about the five subs and how that's going to change the game for so many. Because how many times we've been at Anfield where it's like, okay, we haven't broken down, but we've worn them out. And then in the second half, we can really run amok. Well, if they can make five changes now, then that means you've got a whole new set of people to
run. It should be an advantage
down.
For us, though. It should be more, you know.
I think it goes both ways. I mean, we've had endless discussions about the five subs and who really benefits and who doesn't. But I think that from either team, you can see a motivation. And I think for Liverpool, that maybe they're thinking, well, in the old days where we would be up against a tired defence, 65-70, we can go and kick it on. Now, 65-70, they're getting on three new fresh guys. So we need to have an advantage before that. So then the more you know and the more you try to maybe put pressure on yourselves to get that early advantage, pressure and composure aren't always very related, especially when you've got someone like, say, like Milner or like Van Dijk, who's not necessarily in those positions. I don't want to feel like I'm getting at him, but I feel like I've been saying this on every kind of bit of content I've done for the last 3 or 4 weeks. Trent needs to score more goals. Mm. Like, Trent is the one who's getting into those positions, as we've already highlighted. There was the one in the late in the game. I don't know if he was offside or not. But again, composure, he just absolutely slices through it. And he just... You think that the quality he has, the amount of time he spends addressing a dead ball, we all know he's very good at that part. We need to start making him be a better goal scorer. I don't want to make the comparison to Reece James. I really hate doing it, but in this time it's kind of pertinent because Reece James gets in those positions as well and Reece James scores goals. Mm. That's something we need to change.
Paul, to accentuate a massive positive, it's a glorious goal from Luis Diaz. It really is. The more you watch it back, the more you like. I think he's blind alleyed it massively. I think I literally went, "Don't do that," as he pulled his foot back to shoot, because I think he's ended up all the way over there in the space on the other side. It's on an air and finish. The goalkeeper can't get anywhere near it. I felt like it really kicked him on. I think his first half against Fulham was overstated in the context of the fact that everybody else was bloody rubbish. But I thought what he then produces is what I want to see. I think this is a core thing. I think that Adam's point before about him knocking around the left-hand side of the midfield, I want him all over the pitch. I want him central. I want him going over to Salah's side. I want him buffeting everybody. I want him winning the ball with his chest, laying it off. I want him playing like a centre-forward. That's what we've done, and I like it. And he scores that goal, and I just hope that really does kickstart his season, because he should be a live wire. He shouldn't be able to keep him out the action. And I felt that up until when he scored that goal, Liverpool / himself was keeping him out the action, and then suddenly you couldn't ignore him. It's a great goal.
Yeah, it's an absolutely phenomenal goal, and the difference in his performance after compared to before is night and day. And I think it actually also ties into what Mo's just been saying, and the subs thing is... I'd always thought, I used to laugh about it when Klopp and you'd have the Sheffield United manager moaning about the five sub things, and Klopp saying it's the same for everybody. And you're like, I used to be there going, it's not Jürgen, and you know it's not, and Pep knows it's not. But it wasn't until I was on a show last year, at the end of last year, with you and Rob, Neil, and you made the point that Mo's just made about, you know, they can bring on a load of fresh lads in defence, and their lads are all much of a muchness, so they've just got loads of fresh lads, and now we can't wear them out. And I was still of the mindset that, but that doesn't matter. Because us and City have got all these unbelievable lads. Like, they're bringing on, you know, average Joe to replace average Joe. And that's okay, because he's a bit less tired. But when we can bring on Diogo Jota, and the point linking this in is Diaz as a sub or Nunes as a sub, that's where the swing is in our favour with the substitutions and the additional substitutions. The problem is right now, we haven't got that. So you're saying to Luis Diaz, you need to do both of those roles, mate. You need to be this lad for the first 60, and we want that last half hour performance as well, by the way. So can you just do it all? Because the reality is we haven't got someone to come off the bench. I actually wanted Carvalho to come on earlier last night, and when he came on, you saw how he's not... like. I think this is... when we get carried away with the summer and we're being positive and stuff, and I can see how there are people who get completely down about it, but when those of us want to be positive about it, we can get too far ahead of ourselves, because we can be like, Elliot's amazing and Carvalho's this young superstar. But then when you compare that to what City have got in those roles, I think often we are still lacking a little bit.
I think Carvalho thing is that what he did last night, what happened last night, and what I think he'll get it out of his system quite quickly, was he just looks young. He just really looks young. And I, all the way through, I've not really liked, I've not been into, certainly Carvalho midfield chart. I'm not into that at all because I think he could just get swallowed alive in Premier League games playing in centre mid. But I'm also, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I like the order of where the forwards are as long as they're all available. Yeah. As long as they're all available, then I'm more than happy with the idea of Carvalho at six, and then you're picking your moment to bring him on. The issue is, but within that as well, I don't like, you know, City's sixth option's fucking crap, Cole Palmer. So, but I think that the point at the minute is obviously we can't call on all of ours. Yeah. But I thought you got to see that last night with Carvalho. I thought this, the difference between dealing with whoever he's been dealing with in the Championship and then suddenly Joel Ward. And I don't think Joel Ward is a Rolls Royce of a footballer by any stretch of the imagination, but there's a sudden moment of Joel Ward's got years of Premier League experience, and he just goes, I'll see you in a minute. We'll deal with this later on. And I thought there was an element of that when Carvalho came on. And I actually think, you know, without getting into the ins and outs of bits and pieces of the manager yesterday to a huge extent, I understand why he makes the sub, but I actually thought the sub made us worse because I thought Elliot was still very central in the game and he was still very involved, and suddenly he finds Carvalho's trying to find his niche in the game, whereas Elliot at least knew where his niche in the game was, even if he was beginning to really tire.
And with that, and as well, the way we change.
By the way, if he doesn't do it and it finishes 1-1, we're all sat here, or people like us are all sat here going, should have brought Carvalho on for Elliot because it might have just completely changed
it. Of course. And that's the problem with when you're making the decisions compared to when you're the idiots like us commenting on the decisions, because we don't get to see, we say this time and again, you don't get to see the sliding doors. You don't get to see what happened or if he didn't make the decision or if he made a different decision. And I do think one of the issues with Carvalho is I think the way we changed shape and moved people around when we went to 10 really worked. And Mo came more central. Diaz was just what you described, like, was just free. You know, go and cause chaos, mate. Go and.
I do want to see more of that Diaz after he scored. I think before he scored, and including the shot, is basically what we have seen from Diaz. He does. He nearly scores that goal a lot, or you know, against Fulham, as in a shot from an angle, sort of at the edge of the box. He does do that a lot. I think it was everything he did afterwards, which I thought, okay, that's, you know, that's the, as Neil said, a live wire type thing. You know, it's okay for him to be everywhere, but I also want him to be able to be finishing chances and not be on the halfway line.
Yeah.
But that's kind of why he does it, though. And it's almost like you say, the fact that Neil was saying it looked like he was like going down a blind alley, and there were lots of people saying, oh, God, not this again. But then he scored, and it was almost like when in celebration, he was like, yes, see, everybody, this is what I was trying to do. This is what I was trying to do. So whether it's going to change how he approaches those things, I don't know. It's certainly going to change how the defenders approach him.
I'd also like it to change the way, but I'd like it to change the way in which he's being used. And this comes back to the way
McCrudd's first half. That's when I can't decide whether it's how it's being used or if it's his natural sort of.
That's why I want to see him. I want to see him basically be part of a front three. I don't want to see him in a quasi midfield off the left position. I want him to be a left sided forward who's able to play like a centre forward. And we saw last night, and we have seen occasionally in other splashes, he's able to play like a centre forward. And so I think pulling him away from both the function and the literal space irritates me. I want him to be. I want him to be playing in the space between their fullback and their centre-half a lot of the time, not always, but a lot of the time, and happy to win the ball with his chest and battle for it and then graft it all the way along the line and do their heads in. And that's what he hasn't been doing. And he stops. He does a bit of it last season, but that it begins to sort of ebb away then. Like, I think there's another plan in mind. And I'm sort of all right with other plans, but I'd like to see them working. And I'd like to see them working. And I think last night, even when we're good in the start and we're good for half an hour and all of that, I still feel as though I'd like more things around their goal.
100%. And
more Diaz around their goal.
And it goes back to what I was saying in the very beginning, like him running at people. Because that's the alternative, isn't it? Because at the moment, like you say, he was winning the ball. Every time he was winning the ball, his first instinct was, who am I laying it off to inside? And it wasn't even the case that sometimes he was laying it off to the midfielder, sometimes he was laying it off behind to Robertson, but he was never laying it off in front to Robertson to come around. He was never trying to at least fix the defender first to make him think he's going to go past him and then come back. There wasn't that kind of variety in the play. And variety is kind of what you need sometimes, just be able to give the defenders a little bit of something that they weren't expecting. And going back to what we were saying previously about Fabio Carvalho when he came on, I was kind of hoping for him to not come on for Elliot. I was kind of hoping to see them both together. Because in that kind of broken play, at the end of the game, like I say, if we are chasing it, and everyone had got closer together, the close control element and the dropping of the shoulder elements that those two both have, you can accentuate it by having them close together. I think by exchanging one for another, you're still asking one person to do all of that job.
It would have felt massive to take Fabinho off, though, which I think is his only other point. It would have felt massive to take Fabinho. Again, I wouldn't be fine with it because I don't think Fabinho plays very well at all after the goal. I think from the goal onwards, I think he's really
We haven't really discussed it, but he's at fault for their goal as well. Like the way that, admittedly, Eze made quite a few of our players look stupid last night. The way that he danced in between him and Trent was just a bit
saying Eze in, by the way? Honestly, I'd much rather have in than some fucking vague lad who plays for Sporting. I would be very, very pleased to have Eze play for Liverpool.
Agreed.
I do think that there was a bit of, unfortunately, a bit of Phillips in Fabinho and Van Dijk's head last night. I think that he made them be deeper and closer to him than they would have been if it had been Jolie or somebody else. But unfortunately, again, you know, no insult to him. He's a limited player and it did prove to be, you know, the thing that as soon as the team sheet dropped, even though it took me 10 minutes to spot him, obviously Palace had a whole hour of deciding.
They've got some football professionals as well and they can read.
Yeah, better than me.
I'd love the image though of in their dressing room, like it was only 10 minutes before the game, someone went, is that Nat Phillips?
But
they not told him.
The Diaz thing is, I sort of almost feel like that is even more than Darwin. That is the bit of the puzzle that will unlock this season. I think the correct use of Diaz, and I, weirdly, it still feels like he's just signed. You know, still kind of don't feel like we've got much further than the League Cup final. You know, as in really good solo performances, leaving it all on the pitch, but I can't quite figure out how we're all linking up with him. And I mean, just to go back to, I mean, this is a massively long callback, but when we used to say McManaman was a player out of time and you'd love a McManaman now, a modern sort of McManaman, that could be, you know, that could be Diaz. You know, he could be that, as you were saying, you know, on the left of a front three, a more muscular version, getting it on his chest, you know, doing everyone's head in and still getting to be the solo dribbler, long shot goal man. It's just the link up. I'm not sure who it, you know, when you definitely, if it's Mane and Robertson link up, you know, when it's Diaz, it's like who's his other, you know, who's his partner, because we do have partners in our team, and I'm not sure who Diaz is.
That's all very fair. Last little thing is obviously what comes next. I don't think it would necessarily, Paul, be a shame for Liverpool's next game to be away. I'd like it to be sooner, but I don't think it's a shame for Liverpool's next game to be away, because I think that the idea that things could get a bit fraught at Anfield is a problem. The issue is the walking into Old Trafford, where things will be fraught from minute one. They've got to be able to rise above that. I think the most important thing that can happen across the next few days at the Axer is everyone calms down a little bit. We need to not get caught up in their psychodrama. If we don't, I think we'll get a result at Old Trafford, a positive one, it'll be absolutely fine. But these players wouldn't be human if they weren't thinking there's a fighting chance we could be no winning three off the back of this. And I think that's almost, in lots of ways, it's frustrating not to have two more points. But the greatest frustration of last night, of the Henderson shot at Fulham that hits the bar and doesn't hit the underside of the bar and goes in, is that right now, if they were 4 from 6, we go, all right, you move from there. The worry is, and they wouldn't be human, as I say, you look at it and it's very easy for them to suddenly be played 3, drawn 3, and for everything to feel like, good God, there's a mountain to climb.
Yeah, it's such a weird one. I literally stopped myself sending a jokey message last night to groups of mates saying, yeah, but it's Man United away next, so you couldn't ask for a better fixture because we'll batter them. And I stopped myself saying it because when I went to say it, I was like, well, you're tempting fate here.
And you could ask for a lot of better fixtures. You really absolutely could, because they're not going to be as spineless and as soulless again as they were for the first half against Brentford.
Well, the reality is, at the very least, they're going to run more. They're going to have to. Like, I know there's all kinds of stuff in it. It's interesting seeing how his head might be going already, Ten Hag's. Like, just making them all run 14 kilometres the day after a massive game in, like, ridiculous heat. I get the old school psychology of it. I can imagine his medical staff and the squad going, what are you doing, mate? Do this on Tuesday or Wednesday. We've got 3 months until we play Liverpool.
It's ridiculous how I'll be the gap is, etc.
Exactly. We don't need to do this the next day. And I know what point you're making, but Joe, cancel the day off and make them come in and we'll talk to them about stuff and get in their heads, whatever. But so it shows that there's already issues there. I'm a little bit concerned, actually. It'd be interesting to have a chat with Klopp and ask him how he thinks he's performed so far, pre-season and as the season started, because I do think there's some question marks over decisions that have been made, and even things he said out loud, which I think have been a little bit out of character and haven't helped. So things like the saying out loud, we're extending pre-season into the season. I just don't think you need to say that, even to your players necessarily. Like Guardiola, interestingly, going back to Adam's point before about them looking knackered, I talk about this thing constantly about when we're trying to solve issues in life, we're always looking in the wrong place. We're always looking at the end and thinking it's here, the issue's here, when actually the issue was ages ago and you're just seeing the manifestation of it now. What we're potentially seeing right now is, and everyone sort of dismissed this because we were so caught up in it at the time, it was lovely. We played every game we could play last year. Yeah. And not just the physicality of that, but the emotion and the psychology of it. And then we didn't have a very long break and we didn't have a long preseason. It was really interesting before the Community Shield how many times it was said in commentary, and or before the game and during commentary, Pep Guardiola gives his players extra time off, not, you know, get them back and get them in shape. Because in his head, he's like, I can sort that. I can sort the shape. I can sort the tactics. They need a rest from, because they went, everyone's banging on about us, but they went far off playing every game they could have played last season. And it's interesting that his...
But they'll have got an extra week at the start of that process because they didn't have the Champions League final, and we did.
Yeah, of course. And even with that, he gave them more time off. So it's interesting that he's gone for the, these lads just need more of a break. And so I think there's an issue with that. And it goes back to Adam's point before, which I think we should bring headcasery into like common parlance, because I do think it's the age old, your greatest strength is your greatest weakness. The manager's a headcase, the squad's a headcase, the crowd's a headcase. When that is all in sync and goes well, it's brilliant. When it's not, not great. I'm not sure it's a good idea to be saying before and after the game, we felt like there's a witch in our training ground this week. You're like, mate, I don't think any of us need to hear this, and I don't think you need to put that in the mind of the players, because I think what's happening now is, I think it's mainly muscle injuries, isn't it? I think you've got a load of lads there who are like, my body's just catching up with me from last year. And the issue now going into that
game
is...
We're about one injury away from Ray the Egg popping up again, I think.
Well,
he's out there somewhere.
We're in Ray the Egg territory.
I think we are. I think we could be. And I hope he does pop up. I hope he does.
Good to know he's well and fit.
Yeah,
like, fit and firing.
Generally speaking, yeah. I think it's mad that it's such a big game when we should be... If it was Man City going there, United and City would be thinking...
It's stopping me enjoy Man United's downfall, to be honest.
I mean,
I haven't been able to enjoy it.
To be honest, whenever we play after them, I'm always kind of reluctant anyway, because we've seen it happen. I mean, I just need to say the words 6-1-7-2. Everyone knows what we're talking about. But I do think, like, to your point about Ten Hag going too early, if I was him, I would have at least waited until we'd played. Because, I mean, his team talk is very different if Liverpool have got 4 points and are clearly back on track, whereas now a situation where we're in crisis, we're just like, oh, look, lads, they're not playing that great either. And then you say, OK, now put this work in for me, and then we go and get a result. Yeah. That works a lot better. They didn't do it that way. I don't think that they're going to... I think they're going to regret that. I really do.
I really don't know what we are expecting from them. I mean, I know they've been very poor. Also, as I say, I'm not sure how good we are at the minute.
Do we remember?
I'm not
sure
what's going to happen in between now and then. And I don't. And it's always a difficult place to go. I know we've won there two seasons in a row now, and I feel like we had beaten our own mental hoodoo, which has existed for years and years around.
I think that as well. Yeah. That's big for this.
I do. One other thing that's big. If we remember, just before the 5-0 last season, there was a lot of talk about them not running. There was all the thing with Solskjaer saying, they're not running, they're not pressing people. So what did they do in that game? They tried to press us like an idiot, and we kind of played around them. So if they are in that kind of, oh, we have to prove our point, we have to prove that we can do X, Y, Z, then good.
Yeah.
Because that means they're again vulnerable.
Well, last bit, go on, Cole. Sorry.
I was just going to say, and look, to balance that a bit, because I feel like everyone sort of pile on top of them at the moment, including me. And it came up before when everyone was talking. I do think there's a huge part of this, which I always come back to, and it's like, no one wants to think about this, but there's a huge element of randomness in football, even at the highest level. And in another universe, we're sitting here with 6 points, because even last night, you say Milner should score after 58 seconds, and if Milner scores after 58 seconds, we batter
Crystal Palace. That's what I was thinking about. Diaz's shot against Fulham, he has a very similar shot.
Exactly. And then there's the one he hits the post, we hit the bar as well. Jordan Henderson hits the bar in the last minute. If that dips in, We've run away and we go, we got the 3 points. These things happen. No one's great this time of the season. That's the whole plan. And even last night, I was sort of going through the key points of the match. Nunes has a one-on-one like 5 minutes before he gets sent off, and he completely miskicks it. Mm. Completely miskicks it. If he slots that, or if he slots the one that he also miskicks that goes against the post, again, it's a completely different game. And I think, having just criticised him, I think the build-up to United is going to be reminding these lads that they're absolutely boss, mm. and they should go to United with this newfound mentality that we've had in recent years.
Mm. And look after the game and go from there. Thank you very much to Andy Heaton for producing, Paul Cope, Adam Melia and Mo Stewart. The big picture is hugely, hugely annoying. Liverpool may have been good for 3 points in the end, and they may have had hard lines at Fulham, but I hate mitigating circumstances and never want to hear about them. I prefer to have points. Sports Social Podcast Network.